You are listening to Words with a Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. Coach Sess. Coach Sess. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. I am Mad Coach. Coach Sess. Coach Sess. You are listening to Words with a Mad Coach.
All right, Mad World. Coach Sess. And we're going to talk about some martial arts stuff. And I'm going to use several training sessions that I've had in the last, what is today, Wednesday, so the last 3 days, and give you some reflection. So this is kind of helping those aspiring coaches, the current coaches who are starting to become leaders of the industry, leaders of their field, and just give you some insights from some past experiences, of course, things I've seen, the things that tend to repeat. And some of these things, doesn't matter what martial arts style. Some of these things are going to be the good, the bad, the ugly that tend to show up when you don't want them to show up. But they're things that you're going to have to deal with sooner or later. So you might as well learn about them as soon as possible. And we are talking about things like personality conflicts, which is usually one of the biggest ones. But sometimes it's the thing that we tend to ignore. And that is because martial arts is one of those fields where it is heavily based on being friends with someone showing a certain level of loyalty. And so we don't like having to say no, or I've got to fire you, or I need to critique you on your behavior or performance. And that's because we forget that, hey, guess where we are now? It's a business. It's a business. And it's really hard to have those tough conversations. We just don't want to have them. We really don't. And unfortunately, a lot of times when we develop these close ties and relationships and the cliques, there's too much history. You've allowed too much to happen over time. Now it's hard to have that hard conversation. And so when you have someone who's not performing up to the level you want them to perform at, and you have an option for a better instructor, especially if you're the owner and you need to hire someone. You have someone who's a tad bit better, but it's hard to have that conversation. And that's because the martial arts is one of those industries that talks about all of these things that deal with moral character, as if we're putting ourselves above anyone else. And so if you're a martial arts instructor and you come off that way and you say, hey, this is just business, this is just about doing what's best for the customer, the client, or whatever, you come off like a bad element. And like, that guy doesn't know what he's doing, blah, 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 you know. And unfortunately, sometimes what happens when we let in all this friendship and kumbaya into the workplace and the gym place, what happens is we have so many moving parts. There's somebody in charge of this class that deals with the kids. Somebody's in charge of the adults. Somebody's in charge of the fighters. Someone's in charge of a specialized class like grappling or kickboxing. We have so many coaches who believe that they can do anything the way they want to do it. And one of the things I've seen is that the coaches don't generally get together and have a conversation about what is best practice. You know, what should we be teaching in terms of the teaching method? Not so much the information. The information is usually specific to, well, what does the person want to do? What does the person want to learn? What do they want to know? I get that, because you should not be trying to implement jujitsu structure in a Muay Thai class. But the teaching method, these are things that we can share across the board. And these things don't get taught. These things don't get discussed, because every coach, to some degree in each category, feels like, well, I'm a little bit better. I mean, how is the kids coach, you know, really doing so well, but yet the owner tries to leave it up to the kids coach to go instruct the fighters coach, the fight team coach, tell him what he should be doing. Say, hey, why don't you try a gentler approach? You know, a kinder, gentler coach might get more done in terms of performance. You know, you're going to catch more bees with honey. That's not going to go over well. And that's because, again, we get into this place where we see that we're good at what we do and there's nobody else like us. And so it's a hard conversation to have. So how can we fix that? Well, rather than try to fix it from the outside, teach mechanisms that teach the coaches how to stay students, how to stay learners, how to look at someone else in another field and see how are they able to gain the benefits and perform at a high level. That's what's going to make you a student of the game, because you don't have to play hockey to watch it and realize the team that I'm watching now is playing at a super high level. That's right. All you have to do is understand performance, regardless of what it is, where it came from, who's in charge, what uniform colors are. If you understand high level, you simply understand high level. And what you do is you allow yourself to be a student and just get this valuable information. And that's it. And then you bring back and you share, because if you're being a student of the game, that's what you're going to feel like doing. You want to come back and you want to share with your coaches, your co-coaches at the gym, no matter what they coach, no matter what time they start. And you're going to say, hey, man, I learned some cool stuff here. I have legitimately told coaches and people that I've worked with and told them that when Cesar Millan had that show, The Dog Whisperer, I would literally copy some of the things he would do, especially in the fight training. And one of my favorite things was when the dog wouldn't respond the way he wanted to. He didn't smack the dog across the head the way a boxing trainer does when you miss a punch or you don't have the correct technique. He would place the dog in the position that he wanted the dog to behave. And I adopted that. I said, man, I love that. So rather than smack my fighter, when the hand wasn't in the right position, I simply would place it and then hit it. Put it there and then hit it. And over time, it created the behavior that I wanted. And to be more specific, in a short period of time, it created the behavior that I was looking for. The thing that I felt like was going to protect them, because that's what the behavior was about. It wasn't about my ego. It's like, hey, I knew I'm doing this because, well, you need to be protected at all times. Protect yourself at all times. So when I started doing what I was doing, I knew it was for their benefit. It had nothing to do with me. And so that's probably the first step I would take when you have coaches who've been on the job for a while and you really want to evaluate where they are. This is a good start, because the ones who have a harder time becoming a student, they're going to stand out. And one of the ways you can see it is when you bring in outside coaches, outside trainers, to give you some feedback, you can always tell that there's some pushback, there's some resistance. And again, martial arts is just one of those things where you're in there for so long, that ego is being fed and it's being stroked. And you almost get this sense that there's no one that can do what I do. I'm above everyone else. It's okay to recognize that you're different. I see difference all the time. You can't fall in love with your difference, because you assume that because you're different, that it kind of works for everyone, and it doesn't work for everyone. And so sometimes what happens with coaches, they start believing that, well, everyone should do it my way because I'm smarter. I've been a world champion before. I've trained more champions. I've trained more people in general. Women respond to me better than they do other instructors. So you'll find a reason. You'll tell yourself a story. You'll find the reason that you believe everyone should be adapting to your structure. It's not always right. It is not always right. And on Monday evening, I got a chance to let the hunters, who I've been working with now since, really collectively since about October, I mean, really focused on their teaching, their learning, helping them. And I wanted to see where they were. And I got to see just a really great starting point with them on Monday, letting them get out there and pretty much just run the class All the other coaches said they were going to be out of town. They asked me to take over. I said, this is the moment. This is the Hunter's moment. And I was there to help them. And I gave them some insight, some feedback from based on my insights, this morning. And so I just told them that one of the things I saw, I mean, there was really nothing wrong with the class in itself. I'm just giving insights so that they can improve upon their teaching and training method. And this is a husband and wife team, and the husband had hurt his arm a few days ago. And so one of the insights I said was, hey, there was a point when he was demonstrating certain techniques, and you can see that that arm was ailing him. Because I've trained with him long enough, because I trained him for a fight before, that it looked weird to me. This was not just a guy getting tired. This was not a guy making a mistake. It was intuitive to, you know, flex his arm a certain direction because it was injured. And so I said, and one of the things you can do, if you're co-coaching especially, is, hey, let me just take over the demonstration. Just let fill in for you, for your tag team partner, whoever it is. Just fill in because you realize there's certain things they can't do right now. And that's okay. That's perfectly okay. And that's all I was trying to get across. And then some of the other things I saw was like, don't become so glued to the curriculum. That's one of the biggest ones across the board that I see almost at every gym, and especially with younger coaches who've been given permission to teach the class or address the class. Don't become so driven by the information, because what happens there is you'll become obsessed with, look how smart I am. Look at everything that I know. And one of the drawbacks there is you end up giving too much. So I would always suggest, well, recognize your audience. What are the different levels in your audience? What are the different backgrounds and demographics? So if you have men, women, children, and then amateurs and pros, and some grapplers and some kickboxers and some MMA fighters, well, you have a very, very diverse atmosphere. So you have to kind of find that middle ground in terms of getting the performance to remain at a high level. So one of the first things you want to make sure that's happening is you have information that is not too complicated for those kind of at the bottom, and yet not so simplified that the ones at the top are so bored. And I thought the Hunters did a good job by choosing to go with live isolation sparring drills rather than isolated static drills. I like that strategy, because then you end up addressing everyone in the room. Because by working your isolations, then you're working on skill improvement. And who can't? Everybody can benefit from that. Who can't go without skill improvement? Everybody needs skill improvement every day, as much as you can get it, honestly. So it was a right choice that they went with the isolation drills. And some of the other things that I wanted to see, I was telling the wife, hey, I wanted to see you take the lead a little bit more. Not necessarily have to have a one-upsmanship, demonstrate more showmanship, but they relatively know the same material, the same information. So it would have been great that if the husband had dropped two nuggets and then she dropped two nuggets, and then what you get is you get like a double effect from perspectives. You know, when I was co-coaching with Jason Palacios, a lot of times you got that double element, you know, of the same structure that you're working from. And I gave an example to them this morning. If we were working on footwork drill, I would focus a lot on the actual footwork, the movement, the direction of the movement. And he would focus a lot on the eventuality of someone attacking you in this direction. And he would add in just another tidbit, and that I always thought was beneficial. And so when you co-coach together, guess what? Sometimes you co-learn together. And that's one of the things that a lot of people will forget in these environments, that the better coaches are also students of the game. The better coaches are the learners, because they're paying attention to the people that are in the room with them. They're not just trying to throw out more information. It's not just me, 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 give, 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 give. In some cases, they pay attention and they're receiving just as much as they're putting out. And I've told all the coaches that I've ever worked with, if you ever walk into a room and you're in charge of it, but there's good energy and it's going a certain direction, go with the energy. Always go with the energy. Don't get an ego about it. Sometimes it's another athlete who's saying something, who's able to get really good results in the moment. Go with the energy. Go with the energy. You will be surprised at how well the room handles itself. You'll be surprised like how they respond and how much more they want to train after that.
I get happier about the harder it is because I know that no one else will follow.
It's a selection effect.
And I think if you can shift from this is hard to no one else will be able to do this, then it flips from being this thing that you're like, oh, poor me, to oh, poor everyone else who's going to have to fucking try.
So one of the other things, that was at Team Rock in the evening. So then my next training session with Jake Valdez, he's suffering from a little bit of an injury, so we had to work around it. And I like working with Jake because Jake is a different entity for me, because at one point I was grooming him, and I'm still in a way grooming him to be a coach. And one of the things that we were working on was just finding a different way to get the job done, because he's had his nose broken. And we end up discussing several things that you can learn from a fight. So for instance, a good coach will seek opportunities to learn no matter what the opportunity is. So I was watching Conflict 61, and it struck me that everyone in the kickboxing in the Muay Thai was wearing elbow pads, and they had on proper equipment. They were fighting on or fighting under agreed upon set of rules. And this is a conversation that I've had recently, that if you want to prevent injuries in the gym, you got to be able to communicate. You've got to communicate what the rules are and the limitations, and you've got to stick to that format, and you've got to have the right equipment when you're engaging your activity. In this fight, on this show, what did you see? You saw winners and losers, but you didn't see any broken noses. And so it was a conversation we were having, like, you got to get everybody on board. Every time I deal with an athlete, and he's like, Sean Strickland said this. Over at AKA, they train like this. Over at Alpha Male, they train like this. I'm dealing with people who, in a general sense, want to do what everybody else does, but they've never put a thought in their own head about what makes a good training environment, what makes a safe training environment where you can still get high level of performance. It's always regurgitation, 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 because we tend to say that just because those guys are on TV, that's all the proof that we need that they're good. That's all the validation that we need that they're good. So coaches, you've got to handle that early on. And the reason being is because you're going to get it in pockets. You're not going to get it on a mass weight. Like all 30 of your training students that night are going to roll up on you and go, hey, we all want the hardest bar. That's not going to happen. You're going to get one or two who believes Sean Strickland said it. This must be the gospel. It's got to be the way that we go. And it's not the way you need to go. It's not the only way anyway. And so you got to get ahead of that very quickly. And I would suggest to all the coaches, like, no matter what training methods you use, get really good at identifying the use and the purpose of your training method. And even to some degree, even discover some type of language that you can keep coming back to, a language that don't be cute with it. not language for the sake of language. Let's go into the bobblehead drill. No, that's just, it sounds cool. Right? It's amazing. But let's go into something that has a definable process behind it, and it inspires the trainee. And the biggest thing is that it gets an amazing level of results. Because when I say high volume, low impact, yeah, it's going to be some people that's like, we want to Sean Strickland this thing. All right. Then we don't belong in the same room. But if I can show you high volume, low impact and show you the results of champion after champion who's used the process, champion after champion who's won, champion after champion who has high level accolades, then we know the process works. So if you're going to come up with this language and you're going to come up with training methods, that's the biggest thing, that they have to work. You have to get a benefit from it. You can't just do it for the sake of doing it. Sometimes coaches, gyms in general, will fall into this trap of creating systems that haven't been proven. We've got a system, our way of doing things. The reason is because, well, you can reason yourself to death, but without any actual evidence, because that's what people want. They don't really care about your reasons. They want evidence that you've done it this way and it's worked before. There's a reason why you go to your favorite restaurant. There's a reason why you go to your favorite mechanic, because it's been done a certain way before and you want it done again. You might not like Mr. Marco, but you know Mr. Marco's the best at what he does because it works. And we can have this discussion later about what makes something good, what is quality. But the bottom line is you could care 2 cents about Mr. Marco, but you do care about the fact that he has consistently done what he has said he's been able to do, not just consistently give you a reason. The reason we do it this way is because it's been handed down to me since my grandfather's time. That doesn't mean it works. It just means that they got hoodwinked into a cycle that they can't break out of. And martial arts is just one of those things that has happened to us for many, many years where we get locked in. And again, we get locked in because, well, that guy's my friend. And I can't fire him. I can't let him go. I don't care if this guy is better. I can't let him go because he's my friend. And then sometimes what happens with martial artists, we'll stay for somewhere for so long that we become entrenched in terms of the decision-making process. And no one wants to question my comments or question my ideas. We're just so entrenched now. And so people just tend to go with it. Like it must be the gospel truth. Coaches, do yourself a favor. Spend more time teaching your trainees, your junior coaches or whatever, on how to break something apart, decipher it, reverse engineer it, look under the hood, peel back the layers of the onion to see what's really causing the smell. See what's causing it to run. See what's causing it to grow, to expand, to excel. Any level of performance has a function, has a functionality, has a cause. There's a real strong reason why it does what it does. Get to that. Get to the fundamentals. I've talked about this before with the hunters. There are basic techniques and then there are fundamentals. The fundamentals can be found almost across the board in all different martial arts because you need to move a certain way, the direction of movement, whether you move forward, backward, side to side, low, high, circular, all that doesn't matter when it comes to the name of your martial art. Who invented it? Are you good at those movements? That's what matters. And you can see certain commonalities across the structure of martial arts. Like when you're watching fights and you say, oh, this fighter moves a lot, moves his hips, moves his feet, you know, rolls his shoulders, and he's a boxer. And you say, well, he wins. And then you see those same motions in wrestling. And you go, well, I can tell there's a difference. there's a difference in the way that guy moves. And that's why he wins compared to the rest of the field. You just have to take your time and start examining what the fundamental movements are. Get to the grassroots, get to the bottom line in terms of what makes something work. Why does it work? Why doesn't it work? You know, let's get to that bottom line and figure that out. Because once you figure that out, you got it. And when you get it, you'll be able to keep it. And that's, at the end of the day, that's what you want. You want to be able to keep it.
Becoming a good man.
Every morning, everybody in life starts off with the same amount of currency, 24 hours. At the end of the day, they all end up different because of the way they used their currency during that 24 hours. If you are smart and wise, obviously you spent some time reading books, listening to good tapes, or taking some studies somewhere, because you don't just wake up smart. And if you are stupid, dumb, ignorant, you bought that and you paid for it by the time you sat down watching five movies in a row on HBO. That's all you are. Whatever you trade your time for, you become, it's currency. You buy life with time. So if you want to change the quality of your life, you have to change how you spend your currency. Time.
Currency is time. One of the things that you will notice in the martial art room, in the martial art world, is this tendency to get locked into validation. And this is something that won't let you grow. I've often said, like, what impedes performance when it comes to fighting? And I've said, number one is not showing up to the training environment. I don't care what you do. The training environment is important. Oh, I want to be a good rapper. You've got to go to the training environment, whether that means that's the studio or where all the rappers hang out, or where the writers hang out, or whether that's where your manager hangs out, but it's an environment for it, right? You want to be a good rapper, but you spend all your time playing soccer or working with the kickball team or chasing the pretty girls. But that's not going to do it. That's not the right environment. It's not the training environment. You know, I want to be a good scientist. Study habits. That means there's an environment for that, right? Depending on the field of study, you may have to talk to other physicists so you can learn more philosophical concepts, but there's a training environment for it, right? Watching all the UFC fights is not going to benefit you to be a physicist necessarily, all right? So there's a training environment, because that training environment usually cultivates that instinct, that feeling that you have on the inside, and allows it to grow, and you develop a real passion for it. But you got to get away from the point where what you're dependent on is validation from others. And sometimes a young coach will want validation from the older coaches, of course, want validation from, especially if they don't own the gym, they'll want validation from the owner, especially with belt rank systems. If they're blue belt, purple belt, they want validation from the black belt or the toughest guy in the room. And sometimes you want validation from your students. You want them to tell you that you're a good coach. You want them to tell you that you're a badass. You want them to tell you that you've changed their lives or whatever. I would honestly say you should not look for any of that. You should become glued in and locked in to the work. The work is more important than anything. And one day when you look up, there's the validation. Someone has to just about interrupt you and say, hey, I want to interrupt your good job to tell you that you've been doing a good job. That's the validation you're looking for. That's how hard you want to work. And you don't become obsessed over it. You know, one good job, one good pat on the back is great. I need to get back to work. That should be your mindset. But unfortunately, martial arts is just one of those fields where it's riddled with that mindset of, I need to be recognized. I've got this feeling. I've got this idea. I've done X, Y, and Z. And that's another issue in itself. We feel like we deserve that recognition because I am who I am by reputation. I put in this amount of work. You don't get to decide when it happens. That's, I've often made the joke about if you keep getting in a certain amount of reps, one day you'll look up and you won't remember the day you sucked. Well, your reputation, your validation, all of that comes the same way. You're just doing the thing that you feel passionate about and that you're not, you're ready to pass it on, but you're not looking for any type of accolade for your efforts and your work. It's just part of who you are. And then one day it just happens. It just happens because you don't get to determine. You just look up one day and, well, you're a little bit better today than you were yesterday. You don't remember when you sucked. And that's all you're looking for. That should be the validation when you realize I've slightly improved. And because, again, that goes back to what I was saying about quality. You will start to recognize how do you know you've improved? Oh, well, when I first started, I could barely last the whole class. Now I can last two classes. Oh, when I first started, I could barely throw 10 punches. Now I throw 100. Oh, when I first started jumping rope, I would mess up every 10 reps. Now I can jump rope nearly 200 reps before my feet get twisted up or whatever. You can see it. It's not that hard. It's just you don't get to decide when it happens. And so what makes it hard is when you start trying to anticipate the benefit, the result, the actuality of it happening, and you get frustrated when it doesn't happen. So I hope I've been able to touch upon some of these things that you need to watch out for. And don't be afraid to pat each other on the back when the time is right to give, to appreciate, you know, someone for doing what they do and kind of celebrate in their victory, celebrate in their win. It's actually okay. It's kind of a cool thing, you know. And don't be afraid to tell the students either, hey, man, you're getting better. You're improving. And really mean it. One of the things about martial art world you got to watch out for is we like saying lip service stuff because, well, I feel like if I sweet talk the student, they're going to stay with me longer. Honestly, they will stay with you because you tell them the truth. You know, I asked Sebastian this morning, I said, Sebastian, why do you train here? And he said, it's because he knows I have his best interest, but he knows I'm not going to let him off the hook. I'm going to give him just enough. I'm going to push him. But at the same time, I know how to pull back. And it's a delicate balance. It is always a delicate balance. And for me, it's always worked this way. I know what you've said to me. I've let your words be the determining factor how I train you. You say, hey, man, I'm just here to do martial arts like it's bowling night. I know exactly what you need. You need to relax. You need a little bit of fun. If you say, I want to be world champion, and your actions are not currently matching up to what a world champion would do, that's when I'm going to have that hard conversation. A little bit of that hard truth that you might not like, but it comes out of love. So coaches, I hope I've given you some ideas in terms of things you need to kind of pay attention to, watch out for. But the biggest one I really want you to get is just be a student of the game all over again, because actually that's what makes you an even better coach. All right. You're aware not only what you do, but aware of what other coaches are doing in other fields, what other coaches are doing within your field, and pay attention to what the actual results that people are getting. There's a lot of situations out there where there's personality conflicts, and it goes back to that saying, it's not who you hire, it's who you don't fire. And if you're an owner and that personality is impacting your business, friend or not, man, you got to have that hard conversation. And also, like, just a little tidbit for business owners, pay attention to who your clientele is. And it will change over time. Going back 17 years, Team Rock in the beginning was heavily riddled with kids, teenage boys in particular, who wanted to get into mixed martial arts. A lot of them did. But then over time, it changes where we were structured with more military people. And then lately, we've seen more of a diverse culture with civilians, military, kids, women. You have to learn to listen to your audience, learn to listen to your clientele. You don't just get to dictate it. It's not like you could just walk out to the street and be like, hey, you, come train over here. It's not the way it works. You know, if people like your product, they like your product for a certain reason. And what you need to do is double down on that and go with it. And at the same time, stay a student of the game, stay a student of the business game as well, so that when the change happens again, you're ready for that change. That's the other thing that martial arts can sometimes be bad about. We get stuck on doing things our way, a certain way for a certain period of time that we don't want to change. And it's hard. That is why you should always put yourself in that student role from time to time. I've always warned athletes. I have four coaches, and I've always said, hey, be weary of someone who doesn't have a coach. And I can sit here and list a number of coaches that I know that seek out other coaches, seek out the counsel of other coaches, you know, at Valhalla, Cody Malte or Elevate MMA, Todd Monroe with Matrix. Yeah, just be weary of people who don't have coaches. I know that the highest stand guys still reach out to Gokor, and brings him in for seminars. And I think those guys just got some black belts recently. Tom Ziegler with Carolina Combat Sports is also a highest stand affiliate, so he's brought in Gokor. Yeah, just be weary of people who are not there, islands unto to themselves. And even inside your own gyms, if you have the coaches who, when you set up seminars, those coaches never come. They don't want to be a part of it. If you bring in a guest instructor, they don't want to work. They don't want to be involved. Just again, and I'm not accounting for natural life. What I'm saying is they never, ever at any level, that's when you start getting the clue. Like there might be something, or even if you brought somebody in the same time slot that they've been in, and they become offended. One thing I love about Greg Thompson is one time Greg showed up in a normal time slot. I think there were like two or three coaches on the floor. And Greg says, hey, brother, mind if I teach? Now, this is the guy that owns the building, but he's still humble enough to say, hey, can I teach in my own gym? And I'm like, heck yeah, absolutely. Way too easy. And that's because I'm familiar with the way he teaches. But at the same time, like, you know, I didn't see anybody not participate. I didn't see anybody take off, you know, because they even if Greg taught like something that was repetitive or something that we'd already worked on, everybody tuned in because, hey, you know what? He's going to give a different perspective on the same thing that we've worked. And a lot of times those coaches become offended by that. The better coaches will have appreciation for it, but the weaker coaches will always want the new, because that's the format that they like working from, because it makes them look like they have an infinite amount of knowledge. And trust me, at some point in time, you're going to realize that you want to do more with less. And so sometimes you're going to learn to appreciate these people that just give you a different perspective on the same thing that you've already been doing. All right. I am Coach Sess. You've had words with the Mad Coach.